Welcome back, everyone. Today, we're diving into a case that really gets to the heart of competition and what it means to protect your company's secrets.
It's a story about corporate espionage and cutthroat tactics.
Well, maybe not espionage in the traditional sense. Think more along the lines of knowledge as the ultimate weapon.
That's a great way to put it. We're going back to 1995, a time when the beverage industry was an absolute battleground.
Oh, yeah. It was PepsiCo versus Quaker Oats, fighting for every sip of market share they could get.
And these weren't just your average cola wars, right? We're talking sports drinks, new age drinks, you name it.
You had PepsiCo's All Sport trying to take on Quaker's Gatorade, which is already a giant.
And then there was the whole Snapple situation. Quaker Oats had just acquired Snapple, and PepsiCo was scrambling to catch up.
They were partnering with everyone they could, Lipton, Ocean Spray, trying to build their own beverage empire.
And both companies were pouring millions into research and development, marketing, all those things you do to get ahead.
But things took a dramatic turn when a key player decided to switch sides.
That's right. William Redmond, a top executive at PepsiCo, decided to jump ship and join Quaker Oats.
And he wasn't just any executive. Redmond was deeply involved in PepsiCo's strategic planning.
He knew their game plan, their secrets, their vulnerabilities.
He had access to their confidential strategic plan, a document that laid out their entire competitive strategy for the next 3 years.
Pricing strategies, product launches, market analysis, you name it.
Imagine that, having a roadmap to your competitor's future. It's like having a cheat code for the business world.
It's a game changer. And Redmond also knew all the details of PepsiCo's annual operating plan.
So not just the long-term vision, but the nitty-gritty of how they were going to execute it.
Exactly. Their financial targets, their marketing plans, their operational strategies for the entire year.
He even knew about some of their cutting-edge selling and delivery systems.
Things that could give them a real advantage in the marketplace.
So PepsiCo had to be freaking out. One of their top guys walking out the door with all that knowledge.
It's a worst-case scenario for any company. And of course, Redmond had signed a confidentiality agreement.
So he promised not to spill the beans.
But PepsiCo wasn't taking any chances. They sued both Quaker Oats and Redmond to try to stop him from taking the job.
So they went to court and said, hey, this guy is a walking trade secret. You can't just let him work for our competitor.
It was a bold move, and it really raised some fundamental questions about the nature of trade secrets.
Like, how do you protect information that's not written down, that's basically stored in someone's head?
And how far can a company go to prevent a former employee from using their knowledge and experience?
It's a tricky situation. You have a company's right to protect its confidential information on one hand.
And an individual's right to pursue career opportunities on the other.
So how did this all play out in court? Was PepsiCo able to convince a judge that Redmond's brain was basically a ticking time bomb of trade secrets?
Well, the courtroom became the stage for a high-stakes legal battle, with PepsiCo pulling out all the stops. They meticulously detailed every single piece of confidential information that Redmond had access to, painting a vivid picture of the potential damage if that knowledge fell into the wrong hands.
I'll bet they had some spreadsheets.
Oh, I'm sure they did. And they really hammered home the point that Quaker Oats, with their own former PepsiCo exec at the helm, had deliberately targeted Redmond for his insider knowledge.
So it was all part of some master plan.
That's what PepsiCo is arguing. They pointed to the hush-hush nature of the negotiations, the way Redmond kind of tiptoed around his PepsiCo superiors, almost like he was trying to keep the whole thing under wraps.
Like he was playing some kind of corporate spy game?
It definitely had that feel. And PepsiCo argued that Quaker Oats' plan for integrating Snapple and Gatorade was basically a blank canvas.
So they were saying Redmond would be the artist, and his palette would be filled with PepsiCo's colors.
Exactly. They claimed he would inevitably draw upon his deep knowledge of PepsiCo's strategies, giving Quaker Oats an unfair advantage right out of the gate.
Okay, so what did Quaker Oats and Redmond have to say for themselves? Did they just roll over and say, okay, you got us?
Not at all. They fired back with their own arguments, claiming that Redmond's new role would be laser-focused on the integration of Gatorade and Snapple's distribution systems.
So they were saying his expertise is in distribution, not an overall strategy.
Right, and they emphasized that their distribution model was completely different from PepsiCo's.
Apples and oranges, basically.
Yeah, precisely. They argued that Redmond's knowledge of PepsiCo strategies wouldn't translate to his new role.
But what about all that shady business PepsiCo was accusing them of?
They addressed that head on. They pointed to the confidentiality agreements that both Redmond and Quaker Oats had signed.
So they said, we're bound by these legal contracts. We're not going to break them.
And they stressed that they were committed to ethical conduct and preventing the disclosure of trade secrets.
I can hear the lawyers now. My clients are upstanding members of the business community.
It was a classic legal showdown, with both sides presenting their case and trying to sway the judge.
It sounds like a real nail biter. So who did the judge believe?
Oh, this is where things get really interesting. The judge in this case didn't just rely on the facts presented. He also factored in the behavior of those involved, reading between the lines a bit.
So he was looking at the human element, not just the legal arguments.
Exactly. And he expressed some serious skepticism about the claims made by Redmond and Quaker Oats.
Like he wasn't buying their story.
Yeah, he cited a lack of candor throughout the process.
Meaning they weren't exactly being upfront and honest.
That's the impression he got. And this lack of transparency really seemed to concern him.
Like it raised red flags about their intentions.
You could say that. The judge even pointed out that Redmond hadn't been completely honest with his PepsiCo superiors about his dealings with Quaker
Though it
Oats.
was like he was sneaking around.
It definitely didn't look good.
And ultimately, who won the case?
Well, the judge sided with PepsiCo, granting them a preliminary injunction.
Ooh, wait a minute. A preliminary injunction. So it wasn't a final decision.
You're right. A preliminary injunction is a temporary measure while the court gathers more information and decides whether a permanent injunction is necessary.
So in the meantime, Redmond was barred from working for Quaker Oats.
Exactly. The judge essentially said the risk of Redmond spilling PepsiCo's secrets, even unintentionally, was just too great.
So this wasn't just about proving that Redmond had actively stolen trade secrets. It was about preventing something that could happen, even if it wasn't intentional.
You've hit the nail on the head. This case brought the legal concept of inevitable disclosure into the spotlight.
Inevitable disclosure. What does that even mean?
It means a court can step in and protect a company's sensitive information, even if there's no concrete proof of theft or malicious intent.
So just the possibility that someone could use their knowledge to benefit a competitor is enough to trigger legal action.
That's the essence of it. And this case sent shockwaves through the business world, forcing companies to rethink their approach to protecting trade secrets, especially when hiring employees from rival firms.
So it's not enough to just have a confidentiality agreement. Companies need to think strategically about how to manage these situations.
Absolutely, they need to be proactive. One common strategy is to limit a new hire's initial responsibilities.
So you're saying, welcome aboard, but don't touch anything related to your old job for a while.
Kind of like that. You want to prevent them from working on projects that directly overlap with their previous role.
Makes sense. Keep them away from anything too tempting.
Exactly. A lot of companies implement cooling off periods.
Like a timeout for trade secrets.
You could say that. It gives the new hire time to settle in, get up to speed on the company's culture and practices, and reduces the risk of accidentally revealing sensitive information.
And it gives the company time to breathe a sigh of relief.
Right. And there are other things companies can do, like establishing firewalls within the organization.
Firewalls, like the ones we have on our computers.
Similar concept, but in this case, it's about limiting the new hire's access to certain departments or information.
So you're controlling the flow of information within the company itself.
Exactly. It's about compartmentalizing things, minimizing the risk of unintentional disclosure.
It sounds like a delicate balancing act, though. You want to protect your secrets, but you also want your new hires to feel like they can contribute.
It's all about finding that sweet spot. You want to foster a culture of trust and collaboration while still being mindful of the risks.
Now, this whole discussion has me thinking, what about the employees?
What do you mean?
Well, it sounds like even if they're trying to do the right thing, they could still get caught in the crossfire.
You're right. It's a valid concern. That's why transparency is so crucial.
So if you're interviewing for a job with a competitor, you should be upfront about your past experience.
Absolutely. Don't try to downplay your expertise or pretend you don't know certain things. Be honest and open about the types of information you had access to in your previous role.
So don't play coy.
Not in this situation. It's better to address potential concerns head-on than to try to sweep them under the rug.
And what about documentation? Is that important?
It's essential. Keep copies of your confidentiality agreements. Take notes during conversations about your role and responsibilities. Anything that can help demonstrate your good faith.
So, a paper trail can be your best friend.
Absolutely. It can protect you if there are ever any questions or disputes about your actions.
Now, this whole case really highlights the tension between protecting trade secrets and allowing employees to move freely between jobs. It makes you wonder, where do we draw the line?
It's a complex issue, no doubt. On one hand, we want to encourage innovation and competition. We want people to be able to use their skills and knowledge to advance their careers.
But we also want to protect companies from unfair competition.
Exactly. And finding that balance is the key. Maybe we need more carefully crafted non-compete agreements that are reasonable in scope and duration.
So not these blanket restrictions that prevent people from working in their field for years.
Right. Maybe we need more creative approaches to onboarding new hires, ways to mitigate risk without stifling their ability to contribute.
It sounds like we need to rethink the whole system.
This case has definitely sparked a lot of debate and discussion, and it could lead to some significant changes in the way businesses operate.
Well, I think we've all learned a lot today about trade secrets, competition, and the challenges of navigating this complex legal landscape. It's a fascinating topic, and it really makes you think.
It does. And whether you're an executive, an entrepreneur, or just someone who's interested in the business world, it's important to be aware of these issues.
Absolutely. Knowledge is power, and protecting that power is becoming increasingly important in today's competitive environment.
Thanks for joining us for another deep dive. We'll see you next time.